श्रीला गुरुदेव की जय, श्रीमन महाप्रभु की जय, श्री हरि नाम संकीर्तन की जय, श्री श्री गौर नित्यानंद की जय, श्री श्री गौर गदाधर की जय, श्री दौजी गोपाल की जय, श्री गौराध माधव की जय, ग्रंथराज श्रीमद भागवतम की जय, श्री ब्रह्म स्तुति की जय, गौर भक्त वृंद की जय, गौर प्रेमानंद हरि हरि बोल। प्रणाम, गुड मॉर्निंग टू ऑल वंस कनेक्टेड ऑनलाइन आल्सो, सो वेलकम। फाइनली टुडे वी हैव रीच्ड द वेरी वेरी लास्ट क्लास ऑफ आवर होल ब्रह्म स्तुति सीरीज, 45th class, after, I don't know, like, almost half a year of being lecturing on this in Kansas, Michigan, Alaska, North Carolina, Poland,
Florida,
Florida, Finland, Switzerland, and converging here back in Madhuban, defeated Dauji Gopal. So today we are concluding the series. Interestingly, also today is the appearance day of Sri Sita Thakurani, who is Advaita Acharya's wife. And as we say the other day, she's the personification of Yoga Maya and Gaur Lila. So somehow this whole Brahma Stuti, Brahma Bimohan Lila, has been quite orchestrated by Yoga Maya. So it's interesting, it was not arranged, prearranged. So the very last lecture, the closing of the curtain comes with the appearance of Yoga Maya in the context of Gaur Lila, as we will see today also, how this whole Brahma Stuti, actually orchestrated by Yoga Maya, also converges in Gaur Lila with Brahma appearing as Sri Haridas Thakur. So, Srimati Sita Thakurani ki jai. So today is our third class of conclusion of the series, after having concluded the first 40 verses of the Stuti and after first two introductory lectures. And today we'll be studying the remaining verses from chapter 14 of the 10th canto. We have till verse 56, till verse 61. So still we have a few verses. And as well we'll connect, as we mentioned, Brahma's ultimate success in Gaur Lila. That will be kind of a main topic today. But as usual, let's first begin with some brief recap of what we shared yesterday. In our second conclusion class, where somehow we were trying to plumb the depths of how to understand the love of the Vrajavasis, what's the background of their love, which seems extraordinary, but the more you take the time to go in detail and make the proper contrast and comparison with the love of this world, it actually results in something even more extraordinary than we thought it was. So, and that has to do with Sukadev Goswami's reply to Parikshit Maharaj. Now, in our first class of conclusion, we concluded that class with the question of Parikshit Maharaj. Remember that he asked how is it possible that the mothers of Vrindavan loved someone else's son, Krishna, more than their own children. So then Sukadev Goswami started his reply in verse 50, which was the first verse from yesterday's lecture. So Sukadeva Goswami began replying the question of Parikshit Maharaj from down to up, not from up to down. From the love of this world, the love of the self, the love of the body, and gradually the self of all selves, and all that converging in the figure of Krishna. So he started from this world and he went to Braj, which seems to this world. So this is somehow return to this world, because the Braja Lila, as Sukadev Goswami is explaining, was performed of the stage of planet Earth, of the Bohma Vrindavan. So it's the same Earth, it's the same world, but there's worlds of difference, worlds apart. The same world, but worlds apart. So he begins from here, makes full circle, full integration of complexity, first naivete, integration in between, and second naivete of Brajava. So he begins replying, as you may remember, for most people, the body is the self. So he used the words atma. In Sanskrit, atma can mean the self, the body, the soul, the mind, paramatma, Krishna. All of them can be, depending a lot of where do we invest our sense of I. So for everyone, the self is the dearest in this world. And the self means mostly things here, refers to the body for people in this world. One sense of I. And everything else is dear because of that dearest thing that you invest in a person, you invest in an object, and it becomes dear because your I was invested there, and then comes the mind following, the my following the where the I was invested. The sense of belongingness. So that's what creates this experience of I love this, I like that, in this world, again. And of course, in this way, we are more attached to ourselves, if you will, than to anything else. Although we may think, I'm attached to my car, I'm attached to my house, I'm attached to my wife, on material terms. No, you're attached to yourself being invested in those directions. Then Sukadev Goswami say, even if someone is not the Dehatma body, someone who thinks I am the body, but who thinks this is my body, nonetheless the same premise remains. The self is the dearest thing. The body will be dear in connection to the self, and that person will think like that. And he'll say, indeed, entire the whole universe, whatever you can find, the whole universe, mobile, immobile beings, things, objects, whatever, people are dear because the I is the dearest thing. Your sense of self, whatever you are investing that. So that's Sukadeva Goswami is creating, building momentum, and eventually he reaches verse 55, who was the last verse from yesterday's class, who was kind of the high point of his reply, and in one sense the high point of the whole chapter. When he says, but Krishna is the soul of all souls, the self of all selves, the Atma of all Atmas. So, and all this has replied to Parikshit's question, remember the point. So he's the ultimate object of love. The self is the dearest object in the world, but actually the self is dear because the super self is inside the self. Remember we mentioned that? Something is dear in this world because yourself goes inside that. But the self is inside the super self. So ultimately that's the Paramatma is above the Atma, and Krishna is the very source of Paramatma. So he is the most lovable object, the perfect object of love. What all sense of love reposes finally, ultimately. Whether we know it or not, that's the fact. And of course, that's implication of Sukadeva Goswami's. And that's why the mothers and cows of Vrindavan love Krishna more than their own children. Because again, oneself is even more dear than one's children. So what to speak of Krishna being more beloved than oneself, other's children? He's a perfect object of love. So it's a very important point to make, and the Bhagavatam is trying to make over and over again. Krishna's two Bhagavans. And of course we mentioned how this is, and this speaks about the glory of the love of the Vrajavasis. That helps us to catch a glimpse of how deep is their love, how high to ki apratihata is their affection, how uninterrupted, uncontainable, and that even, again as we mentioned, even if Krishna appears in a different form, as a calf, their love for Krishna keeps increasing. That's the nature of their love. It really corresponds with the perfect object of love to such a point, that object is so perfect, their love is so perfect, that even if that object takes another shape, still that love keeps flowing and increasing. That's the nature of real love. You know, it goes beyond forms, if you will. So today, that's what we saw yesterday in brief recap. Today we will continue with the last verse of the chapter, which somehow are a further, some of those verses at least are a further elaboration from this last high point we reached, Sukadev Goswami's reply is not over yet. And then we will conclude with some final further elaboration of Brahma's destiny as Haridas Thakur and Gaur Lila. But also we will continue catch up today regarding Bhakti Rasa's question yesterday regarding how some of these ideas may be misread or even exploited and abused, and I'm trying to apply in the context of dysfunctionality and ending up in something totally unbecoming and embarrassing. And although we try to reply something in that connection today, the reply will continue because the next verse will be a natural elaboration of that verse. I didn't mention that yesterday because I say something yesterday, today we'll continue speaking about that. But we will see how interestingly the Bhagavatam is presented in such a way that actually it's not giving you a space or real reason for abusing those ideas. So let's go to the next verse and we'll see how it works. So remember, last verse, Sukadev Goswami say, Krishna is the self of all selves, and therefore the highest object of love, and he came in this world by his mercy through his Swarup Shakti and so on. Now comes verse 56. So Sri Sukha Uvacha, Sukadev Goswami said, to those who truly know Krishna, in this connection, all mobile beings and immobile beings in this world are a form of Bhagavan. There's nothing else here. So that's a very interesting. Immediately he's making that point, like implying, okay, this is the thesis, this is the conclusion, Krishna is the ultimate object of love, but then immediately Sukadev Goswami will have a flash of the future. Kali Yuga, the world will abuse his instructions. Those who know that actually will see that everything is a form of Krishna. We will explain in which sense, of course, but in connection to him. So they won't see something separate from him, and therefore, of course, they will act accordingly, which means they won't abuse anyone or exploit or put anything in the name of such an idea. So again, this is this immediate clarification of Sukadev Goswami's kind of further reply to yesterday's question of dysfunctionality in the name of the Bhagavatam or something like that. So now Sukadev Goswami continues expanding his reply. After making the main high point, now he kind of shares some further afterthought and bigger picture. Now, that who reaches that conclusion, that will be reflected. If you actually understood the previous verse, Sukadev Goswami is saying, basically, such understanding will play itself out like it is shown in this verse. Now, if you really went through the previous verse, you will behave, that will be reflected in your behavior as it is mentioned here, which means you will see everything as a form of Krishna. Which means, again, in connection to the Atma of all Atmas. Because if he's the soul of all souls, then he's in every soul. So you have to acknowledge that presence and you have to properly honor that presence, as the Bhagavatam in many other places say. You know, like, you have to pay dandavat, fall like a rat on the floor in front of a dog, acknowledging the presence of the Atma of all Atmas there. So what to speak, your wife, your children, other Vaishnavas. So you follow my point, no? So it's not only about, okay, everything is a form of Bhagavan in this sense, but appreciating that, acting according to that, treating them as such. I mean, how will you treat a hosting place for the Atma of all Atmas? So again, immediately Sukadeva Goswami makes that point very, very clear. Disclaimer, no? That this is like this, don't do this mess. This is the point. No? You have to express that in practice like that. So interestingly, Sukadeva Goswami, before he say he Krishna is the soul of all living beings, but now he's further clarifying commentary to say he's even the soul of all inert things. Mm-hmm. You don't need to be moving for Krishna to somehow be present there. In one sense, strictly speaking, you could say even, of course, it's not that every atom has a paramatma, but interestingly also when we speak here about these three Purusha avatars, Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, and Siddhadakshaya Vishnu has these two features. One is Paramatma in the heart, but the other one is in every atom. So it's a separate feature, it's not the same, but it is say that in that particular feature, you could say every atom is, as one they would say, every atom is an embassy of the Supreme. Now, so every atom is somehow, in the sense of everything is connected to him. He, Sukadeva Goswami, will make this point now. He's the source of everything. Nothing exists isolated from its source.
But the Paramatma himself is not in every atom.
As we know, it's not the same form that is in everyone's living being's heart, but in every atom, there is the presence of Bhagavan in one way or another. And that's why scientists keep studying the atom, because there's so much to be discovered there, yes. Let's see, when all that day will come, we'll be theirs. So, The idea is that everything should be realized as something whose ultimate cause is God. That's the point that Sukadeva Goswami is making here. Everything, every object, person, entity, atom, should be realized. We should reach at some point that type of insight, vision, not just theory, acceptance, but realization. Everything, the ultimate cause of everything is Bhagavan, the ultimate place of the foundation of everything, the source of everything. Everything exists in connection with that. That's in Shastra over and over. That's how the Bhagavatam starts. Namo Bhagavati Vasudeva Janmadiyasya Ayata. Janmadiyasya Ayata means he's the source of everything. In the Gita, Krishna says, Aham Sarvasya Prabhuvo, first verse of the Chatushloki. I am the source of everything. Everything comes from me. Mata Sarvam Pravartate. So everything comes from me means everything. Everything is everything, not just that and that, but not this. Everything has their intrinsic connection to me as their source. So in that sense, everything is Krishna. The Abheda side of the equation, Ved Abheda. Abheda means non-difference. Everything is non-different from Krishna because everything is tied with its source. You cannot just divorce the connection, cut there. So, of course, it's Ved Abheda. It's not only Abheda, because if not, we end up saying everything is Brahman or something like that. But there is an Abheda side, which is as important as the Ved. If you emphasize too much the difference, that's not healthy. If you emphasize too much the unity, it's not healthy. Middle path. So Krishna is... So here Sukadeva Goswami is describing the vision of that person. Of course, it's not a cheap vision. It's kind of the vision very similar to the one of the Uttam Bhagavat that is described in the Bhagavatam, who is seeing everything in God and God in everything. In Bhagavad Gita, similarly, Yamam Pasyati Sarvatra Sarvam Chamai Pasyati, and so on. He who sees everything in me and me in everything really sees, basically. In the words of Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta, everything is potential paraphernalia to be engaged in the service of the Lord, he will say. So you will see something has potential because you see, oh, that's the Bhagavan is its source. So naturally there is a potential to that for being, I mean, that's already connected with Bhagavan. It's just about myself acknowledging that connection. And in that moment it becomes venerable for me. As we, for us, the paraphernalia used in worship of Bhagavan is venerable. Well, everything is a big Arctic plate, as we say sometimes, the whole world. The whole world is made, if you want to put it simply, earth, water, fire, air, and ether. And those five Panchabhutas, main element, five, are represented in the Arctic plate. Incense, earth, fragrance, and fire, the lamp of water, and sound, the bell, the conch shell, and ear, the fanning. So the five elements which made the world are symbolized in that place. So that plate is the world. The whole universe is in that place. And what do you do with that universe? You offer that to Bhagavan. You acknowledge its connection. And then you receive the remnants after acknowledging, the source and the paraphernalia. And then you receive the lamp, you receive some fanning at the end, whatever. But not the, you don't take the plate and start like to self-puja or something. So that's the idea of the arti. There's lots of important symbolism there. It's not that, okay, during the arti we acknowledge that the ceremony is over, now I'm the center and all this is, no. The plate of arti is extending. Now the Arctic ceremony is continuing 24/7. But these are special moments during the day to remind you about those things. It's not just, how nice, how he's moving the chamara, some style, or such a big fancy lamp. That's not the point. This is for you. All this is, and I am part of that. That's an important thing. Everyone and everything is that potential paraphernalia. And I am potential paraphernalia. I'm one of the Shaktis. All this is Shakti of Shaktiman. I am one of those. I am potential paraphernalia, so my duty as potential paraphernalia is to worship all other potential paraphernalia, to acknowledge that first as potential paraphernalia, not to be offered to me, but to the Shaktiman, to worship that and to engage that properly. And that will be how I am engaging myself properly as potential paraphernalia. Everyone, everything. Gradually reaching. That's Vrindavan, basically. If you don't enter that state of consciousness, you won't enter Vrindavan. So that's very interesting, because Sukadeva Goswami is actually speaking about Vrindavan here, although he's not saying Vrindavan, but he's depicting, portraying the attitude of a Brajavasi. Everything is seen in those terms. As Srila Sri Maharaj will say, if you want to go to Vrindavan, you have to understand that everyone and everything there is to be served by you. And you are expected to serve everything and everyone. And nobody will serve. I mean, you won't be expecting anyone serving you. Of course, you will receive everything you need, but you are not thinking of that. You will go there and thinking, everything here is to be served by me. Of course, everyone has a thinking the same, and that's how everything keeps in harmony. But you have to have that attitude, and not to be like calculating, but if I serve everything, what's for about me? Well, no. At one point, you have to reach self-forgetfulness. So the Sinaras will say self-sacrifice, self-forgetfulness. In divine love, not self-forgetfulness in tamaguna and depression. That's not self-forgetfulness. No. Still, you are in the center. So the idea is everything exists within Krishna. And Krishna exists within everything. That's over and over again the meditation. Of course, the order of progression generally is always from the energetic to the expanded energy. No? Of course, he's in everything, everything is his, but he is the source of everything. There's only one tattva, according to the Bhagavad, Advaitin tattva. There's only one reality. There's not two realities. Reality is not dual. It's absolute, non-dual. But it expresses itself with diversity because of the presence of Shakti. That's our philosophy. But the absolute is one. So you cannot separate fully Krishna, world, jivas. You have three realities now, suddenly. So we don't have three realities, four, five, two. We have one. One tattva. Tattva means reality. The reality is one. It's unified. This unified field, as they speak sometimes, in modern terms. And in that context, there is diversity, but on the foundation of unity. So we need to acknowledging that unity, that underlying foundational unity of reality. Because if not, again, we are seeing things in isolated terms, alienated terms, one thing here, one thing there, I'm here, and lack of connection is there, lack of yoga, of sense of union. So, anyhow, in this verse, Srila Sukadeva Goswami therefore is presenting the fruit of understanding the previous verse properly. Again, Krishna is the Atma of all Atmas. How that will turn out, you will see everything. Him in everything, everything. Everything is a form of Bhagavan. Everything in is an embassy. Every atom is an embassy of the divine. That's an interesting idea. Everything becomes a place where God, how is it in English, abides, is abiding, no? A place of residence, an embassy. Every atom, try to imagine if you really have the vision, every atom turns, I mean somehow Brahma, this is one way had like this type of vision that from Krishna so many things are coming. And so imagine you start to see every atom. There's movement in the atom, there is life, there is something going on, there is we'll say there is song and dance. Of course, a scientist will say that's too much.
String theory.
Yeah. So we'll say there is someone moving the strings. There is string, but there is someone, the stringer is there. No? So that's the point of Sukadeva Goswami. This was said by Sukadeva thousands of years ago. Those who know Krishna is the soul of all souls, then everything becomes a place where God is residing in one way or another, again, different forms in which God can manifest. And that's Sambandha, actually, the idea of Sambandha Gyan. Bandha means tied, and Sam means everything. So Sambandha means to know how everything is connected. So everything, again, is in one sense a form of Bhagavan. Everything is connected with him, with its source. To have that unified orientation, as Guru Maharaj will say, conceptual orientation, which teaches me everything is part of God. Everything is an energy of the divine. And on that basis, you can engage in avideya, in bhakti. If you don't have that unified education, your bhakti process practice will be fractured, if you will. You won't be fully. And that's why sometimes so much emphasis is done in study Shastra and educate yourself, not because we are promoting intellectualism or brain stuff, but if you don't get proper orientation about who is who, what is what, in connection to the center, your attempts in practice won't be fully fruitful because they won't be properly informed. So the result, the prayojan won't be there either, the ultimate fruit. So sambandha, videya, and prayojan, these three have to be, I mean, sambandha has to be in place to begin with. In one sense, sambandha is synonymous with prayojan. Because if sambandha is in place, the natural result of that will be a certain way of conducting in my life that will take to prayojan. In that sense, they are synonymous. But if there is no proper sambandha, there won't be proper avideya, what to speak of prayojan. But if there is proper sambandha, you will conduct yourself in your life and practice in such a way that eventually that realization will come. Every atom is an embassy of Bhagavan. That's why Srila Semaras will say things like, the more you advance, consciousness will be more, you will feel consciousness nearer and nearer you, and matter will be far and far and far, more far away. And he will say, some people doubt about the existence of spirit. Srila Semaras said, and he said, we doubt the existence of matter. Because when we observe matter in detail, we find the presence of Bhagavan there. So we start to wonder, is there a matter actually? No. He sometimes in subjective evolution of consciousness, he will say something like that. No, like matter is, what's the expression he said? Matter is like densified spirit or some things like this, no? Like trying to make the point, even if you want to speak about matter, which there is, Maya Shakti, etc., go through that, go to the backdrop of that, and there he is, somehow. And that's why we should take time to investigate those directions deeply, not just, let's jump and speak about Manjari Bhav or the Leela, without properly studying the atom, if you will. I'm not saying become a scientist, but be like what Guru Maharaj will say regarding Srila Siddhar Maharaj, no? Like he generally used to speak on basic things in the deepest way. So go to the basic stuff and try to go deeper in that before you want to jump into the higher thing and just grab that superficially. That's not very tasteful. No? Try to see God in the atom, if you will, through the result of your own bhajan. And then we can take you seriously as an aspirant for the higher realms of service. Because if we do not acquire that realization of recognizing and acknowledging everything as potential paraphernalia, what is that talk of speaking, let's go to the Leela and serve there? If you are not developing the attitude to see everything as paraphernalia and serving everything, you won't be there. You won't go there, because to go there means to understand what's going on there and be willing to embrace that here and now, develop the vision for that to happen, and that will naturally transport you there. So in that sense, since in one sense everything is a form of Krishna, from that perspective we could say everyone is ultimately loving Krishna only. We can conclude that. Of course, whether they know it or not, it's not that most people is. Some will love, again, love in one sense. I'm not again speaking about prema bhakti, bhakti rasa, sthayi bhav, lila. But in the ignorance of avidya, Ipada Jiva is loving Krishna indirectly. By loving those things that are him. No? As we say, everything in that sense is Krishna. So by loving your car, by loving everything, since Krishna is in one form or another present, they are loving Krishna. In one way, they are loving one form of Krishna. But you can escape him, that's the point. Or you can, of course, love him not indirectly, but directly, not in the ignorance of avidya, but also you can love him in the ignorance, divine ignorance of prem, like the case of the Brajavasi ladies who were loving Krishna through those boys, although they did not know it was Krishna. No. They thought, they are my children, and they are loving Krishna. No. They don't know they are loving Krishna. And people in this world don't know they are loving Krishna. There are two different types of ignorance and two different types of love and two different types of Krishna. But at the end of the day, you cannot escape that principle. And so he is there. Mm. Anyhow, that's an interesting, fascinating topic. But let's go to the next verse. But just I want to clarify all this in connection also to the previous statement. No? So if you really embrace the previous concept, there is no way that you will end up being dysfunctional exploiter, abuser in the name of only loving Krishna. Only loving Krishna, what does it mean? If you really understand all that Krishna means, you will end up loving everything and everyone in connection to him. Let's go to verse 57, next verse. Sukadev Goswami will continue for at least one more verse, elaborating on this idea, and then he will continue, but in another direction slightly. He says, the existence of all things is established in the existing cause. And since Bhagavan Sri Krishna is the cause of those causes, how can a thing entirely different from him be ascertained?
You can repeat
it now. Yeah, he's making the same point from another side. The existence of all things is established in its existing cause. So whatever exists has a cause. So you can ascertain, establish their existence analyzing the cause. So you can also speak in terms of effect and cause. Not many things we see as an effect, but there is a cause behind that. And there's a cause behind that since we reach the cause of all causes, which of course you may imagine who that person is. Not Bhakti Rasa, not Samadhi, not Toyin Pandana. And since Bhagavan Sri Krishna is the cause of those causes, because again, you can see causes in the world, but there are a cause behind that cause. So Bhagavan is the cause of all causes. How can a thing, so anything, entirely different from him be ascertained? How can you ascertain something entirely disconnected from him? Like in playing, it's not possible. He is the cause of all causes, means everything is an effect, if you will, of that original cause. So you cannot just analyze something separate, totally separate from him. It's not possible. It's making the same point from of the previous verse from another perspective, in other words. So somehow Sukadev Goswami, by saying this, he's replying, before in the previous verse he said, okay, Krishna is everything. Or you can, everything is a form of Krishna in one way. In that sense, he is everything. And someone may ask, in which sense he is everything? So he's trying to further explain that in this verse regarding this idea of cause. So Krishna is known as Sarva Karana Karanam. You know that idea. Ishvara Paramakrishna Satchit Ananda Vigraha Nadira Dira Govinda Sarva Karana Karanam. That's the very beginning of Rama Samhita. He's the cause of all causes. In that sense, no? Because sometimes devotees use, no, Krishna is the cause of all causes, so if I kill my mother, if it was Krishna, yeah. No, it's not the point. Here we are making it clear in which sense he's the cause of all causes. No? Any other existent cause has him as its original foundation, its support. In that sense, he is everything. In this sense, again, we are not promoting Advaita Vedanta, because you can just try it. If you are simplistic with these sections, that we don't take the time to delve into that, you may end up just justifying Advaita Vedanta being a serial killer, and no, it was Krishna, cause for cause. So the idea is nothing exists disconnected from him. There's not, again, a second tattva, a second reality. Reality is non-dual. Sometimes in contemporary terms, they will say the foundation of reality is consciousness. I mean, not everyone will say that, but more and more, even in the scientific community, will say that the foundation of reality is consciousness. That's another way of saying, I mean, of course, they're not saying Krishna, but Krishna is the very foundation of consciousness. Again, he's the cause of all causes. So in that sense, we are saying that's the foundation. Consciousness is foundational. On its basis, everything else unfolds, if you will. The unfolding comes on the foundation of primal consciousness, and he is that, the person, condensed personified form of consciousness. Of course, we Gaudiyas will go beyond that and speak about the consciousness of Krishna, Sri Radha, Krishna Chaitanya, Gaur Lila, but that's too much at the moment. So even, again, my point is sometimes we speak about these high things, but just exploring the very foundation of that, there's a lot to unpack. So basically, Krishna is the root of everything. That's what Sukadev Goswami is trying to make here. Krishna is the very root of existence, janma, mool. And naturally, of course, when he was the cause for the appearance. If we still bear in mind the question of Parikshit Maharaj, these boys and calves, he was the cause of the appearance of these ones. And he's naturally the perfect, the ultimate cause, the perfect object of love, as we spoke yesterday, before. So naturally, he was the perfect shelter of Prem in those forms. He's the cause of those forms. He's the perfect object of love. So if he takes those forms, or whatever form, he still remains the perfect object of love. And that's why the mothers, again, were loving those forms. So Krishna is the complete whole, again, the cause of all causes, and the ultimate object of love. So that's how we can explain. And this applies ultimately to the Brajavasis. They are the ones with the highest realization of all these principles. So for them, Krishna is the ultimate object of love, even though they may not explain that in civilized language in the Braj. When they come in Gaur Lila, they will write volumes about that, but in the Braj, they're like just driven by their emotions, if you will. But that's a perfectly informed drive, if you will. No? So this was what's shown in the Brahma Vimohan Lila, basically. No? As we said yesterday, no? The gopis, nor the gopis, Vatsalya gopis, nor the cows, they were not aware Krishna's our calf. Krishna has become our child for a year, hallelujah, or something. But they kept loving him more. Their Krishna Prem increased in connection to those forms. Because again, the love is costless, unobstructed, doesn't need for it to have Krishna in that particular form. If it's Krishna, it's just like overflowing. They do not have to be aware that Krishna is God. They don't have to be aware that Krishna is Krishna. No. They may be aware, he's my child. Krishna prema is increasing. So that's the unique nature of the Brajavasis love, which again is not easy to understand. And that's why Sukadeva Goswami is presenting verse after verse of this, if you want to put it, dense philosophy. It's not so dense, but trying to take, to dissect and explain, not all this in more logical, philosophical terms. So this is kind of the end of Sukadev Goswami's reply to Parikshit Maharaj, why the mothers love someone else's son more than their own children. So I hope that was clear. And for Parikshit Maharaj, it was clear for sure. So after replying to Parikshit Maharaj's questions, Sukadev Goswami now will reach the conclusion of the chapter. Now the remaining verses will be more spoken in tone of wrapping up and concluding and giving some blessings and giving some summary of the whole thing and setting the stage for the next chapter, if you will. So we will go through that. In the next verse, verse 58, somehow Sukadeva Goswami will also take, okay, we received this philosophical conclusion about the Atma of all Atmas and love, nature of love here in Braj. What we are supposed to do with that knowledge in practice, how to express, no? The sambandha. Till now it was more like sambandha section. Now, what is what? The jiva, the atma, the world, Krishna, the relationships here, and so on. So how to take, of course, now he will turn from sambandha to abhideya, which is bhakti. So he will promote bhakti in the next verse, verse 58. So he says, for those who have accepted the boat of the lotus feet of the Lord, who is the shelter of the cosmic manifestation and is famous as Muradi, the ocean of the material world is like the water contained in a calf's hoof print. Their goal is the supreme abode, that place where there are no material miseries nor danger at every step. So that's verse 58, in which Sukadeva Goswami is again promoting from sambandha. The natural outcome of sambandha is bhakti, abhideya. When you receive proper education, okay, I am potential paraphernalia to serve Krishna and everything. So the natural outcome of that education will express itself in the form of bhakti. Bhakti is, we could say, bhakti as abhideya is just the byproduct of proper sambandha. You receive proper sambandha, you cannot do anything else but bhakti. Because you understand, who am I, who is my source, what's the connection between everything with the center, how to play that out, that's called bhakti. So bhakti is the natural consequence of this sambandha, which sambandha, of course, is also bhakti, this knowledge about Bhagavan and so on. So here, Sukadev Goswami mentions that in the context of those who have accepted the boat of the feet of Bhagavan, it's a way of saying, or engaging in bhakti. It's not about entering in any boat, literally. So here is describing the feet of Bhagavan, and Sukadev Goswami uses the word pallava. So pallava means like blossoms, like a flower bud. So he is referring like, due to the commentator said, due to their delicateness and also to their reddishness. And in that connection, the idea is that one toe, you say, is one blossom. And the point is, the implied sense is, his feet are like a wish-fulfilling tree. So only with one toe, with one blossom, you don't need the whole lotus flower, if you will, the whole feet. One toe of that, or even the two nail, and they start to make this type of even more small, you can attain everything, you know? Even liberation. One toe can bestow everything. Sometimes we pray to the lotus feet, but we don't need even the 2 feet, we don't even need 1 foot, it's one toe is enough. One blossom of that lotus can. So his blossom like feet, if you will, are the boat to cross over the material life. So that implies bhakti. Through bhakti, there's no more material life. Now, we're not speaking so much here about hankering for mukti, but just no more material life, no more material consciousness, seeing things in those terms, as had been described with proper sambandha. You stop seeing the world, you stop your material lens, if you will, because everything appears in front of you, at least in theory. You understand, I mean, everything is a shakti of Bhagavan. Wow, in one sense, I don't have to go anywhere. I just have to acknowledge this fact in practice, and that's it. The rest will be the result of that acknowledging. So, also, and the idea with this point of the feet of Bhagavan is that because we could also take, okay, by taking shelter in those feet, you cross over this world. So one could say, by not knowing that his feet give the highest pleasure than mere liberation, you will end up only seeing those feet as a boat to cross over samsara, like many people do. They take shelter in Krishna just for the sake of mukti. Akama sarva kama va moksha kama dharati sisevatan tibrena bhakti yogina jayita purushampara. Whether you have no desires, all desires, one desire, mukti, you just worship Bhagavan. Sisevatan. So some people may not realize service to those feet is in itself the highest goal, is in itself a post-liberated status. That's bhakti. And they may see just the feet as a boat to cross over, as a means of crossing. But as we already say in the Tattinu Kampam verse, Jiveta Yumoktipade Sadaya Bhak, this famous verse from Brahma Stuti. Moktipade means bhakti, at whose feet mukti resides. So you don't, that's for us real mukti. Bhakti is real mukti. Because in mukti still you have this desire, I want to be liberated. You have some desire of your own. In bhakti, ideally you don't have that. Anyabhilasita sunya. So mukti for us is prem. And prem is mukti from mukti. You obtain liberation, from the desire of liberation. That's why over and over again it's said, devotees do not care for liberation. Narayana parasarvi nakutasna navibhyati svarga apavarga narakishva pitali artha darshana. Devotee doesn't care to be in heaven, in moksha, in hell. He only care for the service of Bhagavan. That's the all important. The other thing are just secondary. So it's interesting because this verse is saying, when you take shelter in those feet, the boat of those feet, the ocean of samsara, which has oceanic dimensions, means you cannot just measure beginning or end, it becomes like the water contained in a calf's hoof print. Not even a cow's hoof print, but a calf, smaller. So this is a classical example in many verses in Shastra. The ocean becomes a calf footprint. So the point is, if the ocean becomes a calf footprint, you don't need the boat any longer. You just can cross it like we do in one step and you're there. You know? So, so the idea is, when you take proper shelter in that boat, the boat disappears because you realize, there's no ocean to cross now. That's the reality of bhakti. When you properly engage in bhakti, you realize, I'm there already. There's no need to hanker for mukti to cross any ocean. The ocean disappeared. what it was seen as the ocean, terrible ocean with sharks and monsters in the sea and all these dinosaurs coming from the water, became, because all those monsters were there because I was seeing the world with eyes of exploitation, without bhakti. So it seems like a terrible ocean to cross, but I take shelter in this conceptions given by Sukadeva, everything is potential paraphernalia. Oh, now it became calf foot footprint. I can take the dust from that hoofprint even and put it on my hands. So I don't need to see his feet as means of mukti any longer, basically, because there's something beyond mukti. That's the main whole point of the Bhagavatam. Mukti is not the goal. That's really revolutionary for the times, for everyone at the time. Dharma, artha, kama, moksha, period. Bhagavatam said, Kaitab Dharma, that's cheating religion, even mukti. Atmaramas, Chamunayo, no, even Atmarams like Sukadev, Muktas, attracted to bhakti. That's a real thing. Like, okay, 18,000 verses to explain that. So, again, those feet, when you take proper shelter of those feet, of that boat, those feet will show themselves as they really are. Not as a mere means of crossing, not as a boat, but as the perfect object of eternal service themselves. Those feet, the service to those feet. You follow my point? Mm-hmm. So you start to realize as a bhakta, sadhana and sadhya, in one sense, are the same thing. The practice at the goal is bhakti. Confirm. Sadhana and sadhya are the same thing, bhakti. Sadhana bhakti, bhava bhakti, prema bhakti, but bhakti, bhakti, bhakti. So that's the idea, no? If you properly engage in bhakti, all those things will be realized properly, no? Of course, for that to happen, to attain this ultimate vision, realization, and taste of serving the feet of Bhagavan, understanding this service is in itself the goal, not mukti, post-liberated status, we have also to work hard, no? It's not just like chant and be happy. We agree with the idea, but we have to pack the implications of chant and be happy. No? Like Deva Madhava in Michigan, he will say, I like basically to better say chant and be honest. No? And then we speak about happiness. But first use the age and put honest there, not happy. Be honest. If you're not, you don't expect something else. So honesty also means I have to work hard in my sadhana. There's effort in order to get grace, as Guru Maharaj will say. No? I have to take the time to study all the things properly. I have to apply myself in sadhana on the basis of what I've studied, on the basis of what I've known. There's one saying in today's last class, we may be especially long, a little bit more. This is our today's celebration, with your permission. And there's one popular saying in Sanskrit which says Sriyamsi Bahu Vijnani. Sriyamsi Bahu Vijnani basically means Shreya means like auspicious. So whenever you pursue something auspicious, many obstacles will be there. Some hyperrealism from India coming to us. Whenever you not to get discouraged, but just you want something auspicious, something valuable, something deep, okay, there will be many obstacles. Not necessarily from outside, just to attain that. And we are speaking here about the most auspicious of all auspicious things. Brahma even spoke about that in his stuti, using the word Shreya as well. your feet are the most auspicious. Service to your feet are the most auspicious. Mm. The Bhagavatam, the experience of Bhakti Rasa is the most auspicious thing. Mm. And the Bhagavatam itself is Rasa. Pibhato Bhagavatam Rasam Alayam. So, if you want to pursue the experience of Bhakti Rasa, there will be some obstacles, or many. In our own minds, again, it's not that outside, the enemy is outside. But in our approach to the experience of Rasa through the Bhagavatam, for example, what we are trying to do here now, we are studying Brahma Stuti, Bhagavatam, Bhagavatam is Rasa. But you have to sort out different things that may get on the way of your approach to the Bhagavatam, like Rasa Bhas, Apasiddhanta, wrong readings of the verses, as Bhakti Rasa was asking yesterday. So we will have to work hard to transcend these obstacles. In two ways we have to work hard, at least. One, again, as I mentioned, first you have to work hard to study all the things, to understand what's Rasa, to acquire proper Sambandha. That's not a joke. It's not just like, I just chant and all will be revealed. What idea do you have of chanting and revelation? So we have to take time and energy using our head to soften our heart, but studying, learning the things, education, oriental, conceptual orientation. That means work hard. And then you have to work hard to realize that. Avideya. You have to work hard in order to acquire proper Sambandha. You have to work hard in order to apply yourself in practice, avideya. And only then will come prayojan. In that sense, you may say there is no more hard work in prayojan. Although everyone is willing to sacrifice their life and die millions of times to give the smallest pleasure to the divine couple. No? So, but the point is, we have to go through those things. No? It's not just like a cheap situation. So we have to invest as much as we can, again, without over-exerting and entering to neurosis. But we want something auspicious, there will be obstacles. There will be hard work to do, both in terms of educating ourselves and applying ourselves in the practice. Next verse, say 59. Sukadev says to Parikshit, since you inquired from me, remember Parikshit made some questions, I have fully described to you those activities of Hari that were performed in his Kumara age, but not celebrated until his Poganda age. So here Sukadev Goswami is clarifying what Parikshit asked two chapters before. 12th chapter, verse 41 of the 10th canto. Remember, Parikshit was asking, because Sukadev say, so Krishna killed Agasur and his devotee, and all this was known to the inhabitants of Raj after 1 year. And then he continued, so Parikshit said, no, 1 minute. How could things done in the past have been described as being done in the present? Not like it just happened. I mean, everyone knew after 1 year, but it's just described as this. So then the whole Brahman, Brahman Lila unfolded and the whole Brahman stood. So that's now, again, Sukadeva is wrapping up and closing. You inquire from me two chapters back. So I have described those activities that were performed in Kumar age, killing of Agasur, but were celebrated in his Poganda age. So that year that passed, where Krishna expanded himself, that was his transition from Kumar to Poganda. So now we go to verse 60. Two more verses left. So verse 60. Now comes a blessing from Sukadeva Goswami to all the hearers. Any person who hears or chants these pastimes Sri Murari performed with his cowherd friends, the killing of Agasur, the taking of lunch on the forest grass, his manifestation of transcendental forms, and the wonderful prayers offered by Brahma, is sure to achieve all his spiritual desires. So Asirvad Sloka, verse where a blessing is being stated for those, anyone who hears or chants, of course, as we will say, not just passively with any attitude, but in proper way. And he then lists all these pastimes that were mentioned in the last chapters, the killing of Agasur, the picnic lunch, the manifestation of thousands of Narayan forms, the prayers of Brahma. Here the word Vyaktitaram is used, transcendental, mostly to refer to the transcendental forms that came out of Krishna during the Brahma Vimohan Lila. But the commentators mention also the word transcendental here, vyaktetaram, can be applied to all the different activities described here. And that word is modifying the killing of Agasur, transcendental. Mm-hmm. No? The picnic, transcendental. The prayers of Brahma, transcendental, and so on. And so everything was out of this world. Basically, that's the implication. All that was described here was the play of Bhagavan Sarup Shakti. And all this is orchestrated from above by Sita Thakurani Jogamaya. So again, this verse is very classical type of verse that comes at the conclusion of certain sections. It's called Fala Shruti. Also, Fala Shruti means like statement. Shruti means also statement. And Fala means fruit. So a statement in which the fruits of going through this section, whatever it may be, is described. There are many. At the end of the Rasa Panchadhyay, this is the end. Five chapters of Rasa Lila. Vikriditam Rajabadhu Viridam Chavishnu Shradam Vitanu Shunujada Tavarna Yedyat Bhaktim Param Bhagavati Pratilaga Kaman Hridroga Masya Pahinotya Chirena Dhira. He who hears the play of Vishnu with the cowherd wives of Vrindavan, with proper faith, that person becomes Dira and conquers the disease of the heart, which is lust, something like that, and attains topmost bhakti. That's the end of the Rasali, like the blessing. If someone hears attentively with faith. So here is something similar. If you hear attentively with faith this, all your spiritual desire will be fulfilled. And also interestingly, we could say that in answer to whether Brahma's prayers will be answered or not, because still someone may be curious. I mean, we try through the commentaries to see how that will be heard. But if you don't go to the commentaries, you just go through the verses, you may be wondering, so what about Brahma? Will his prayers will be answered or not? So this verse is also replying to that with Kaimutya Nyaya. This Kaimutya Nyaya is, what if? If someone who just hears or recites this attains everything, what to speak of one of the main characters of one of those lilas? How much more that person will attain all his spiritual desires, especially if the person has a very specific, strong spiritual desire, as Brahma did. So in this way, this verse is sharing the blessing not only to the readers, but reconfirming Brahma will attain his goal, Asirvad. And also sometimes these verses, apart from sharing a blessing, are there to entice, if you will, the audience to study this section seriously. You want this? Okay. Go through this, but seriously. Again, not just like casual reading. Okay, I read it. Where are all my spiritual desires now? Sanatana Goswami comments in this direction. In this verse, he says, even if someone is inclined to hear and chant these pastimes, will achieve perfection. Even if he doesn't end up doing that, for whatever reason, but is inclined. Of course, if you are inclined, you will do it. But if something happened and you were not able, but the inclination was there, you will achieve spiritual perfection. Like implying also, but if you hear and you are not inclined, nothing will happen. If you are sitting there just because, I don't know, who knows, but you are not inclined. But even if you are inclined, but you didn't get to listen the whole thing because the cows left and Kishore has to run now and he was not able to hear, everything will come from that. And he concludes Sanatana Goswami, apart from this, no special qualification is required. Just try to be inclined. No? That's the very idea of the beginning of the Bhagavatam. Dharma Prito Kaito Votra Paramonir Matsaranam Satam Vedyam Bhastavam Atravastu Shivanam Tapantrayan Mulanam Srimad Bhagavati Mahamuni Kriti Kipmi Parairishvara Sadyohri Diya Varudyati Trakriti Vishasrus Vistakshanam. The last line of this verse is saying, even if you are inclined to hear the Bhagavatam, Krishna will enter your heart and reside there. And he won't be able to leave. Even if you are inclined to hear the Bhagavatam, even if you were not able to do it, but if you have some inclination to... So the point is, try to culture that inclination. And if you already have that inclination, well, you will show that in your own practice and it can be increased forever.
This is interesting in relation to Prabhupada. Mm-hmm. He wasn't able to finish his... I mean, of course, he had gone through it many times, I'm sure. he wasn't able to finish his commentary.
But he had inclination. But also he had another inclination which mystically made him finish the commentary at right that spot. That Guru Maharaj mentioned that many times. He finished his commentary in Brahma Vimokan Lila. That's not like coincidence, but that's God incidence. No? And he entered that portal. He absorbed so much in that section that is no more commentary. No? You want more commentary, enter that portal and go there and find it for yourself. So again, Sanatana Goswami, but yeah, he's making this point. If you are inclined, nothing else, that's the adhikar. Try to be inclined. But of course, inclined means you have to have faith in these facts. No? And sometimes that's not so easy. For example, even to have faith, just by being slightly inclined to hear that all perfection will come, you may feel, ah, that's too much. Ah, they're exaggerating. They want more clients in the Bhagavatam class. So if you have that idea, of course you won't bear the fruit of that. But if you have faith and apply accordingly, of course that requires effort. Again, as Guru Maharaj said, you have to make effort to get grace, to develop this proper faith. So anyhow, that's a Phal Shruti, the blessings to all of those who have been following this Brahma Stuti for the last months. And one more verse is there, interestingly. Sometimes the chapters end with the Phal Shruti, but now comes one extra verse, one last verse, verse 61, which we all see, it's interestingly, exactly the same verse as present a few chapters back. Exactly the same verse, which have given place to some people saying this section of the Bhagavatam is an interpolation. Interpolation, you say? Mm-hmm. We explained that in the second introduction class, how this is not an interpolation, but there are people who think like that in the Madhva Sampradaya and the Balava Sampradaya and other groups. So we'll go to that. Verse 61. In this way, Sukadeva Goswami speaking to Parikshit, and connected with the next chapter, and returning to what he was telling before Parikshit asked the question about why something was told after 1 year the Vrajavasis knew. No? So he's going back to that point and now connected to the next point. No? So that's the idea of this exact same verse. In this way, the boys spend their childhood in the land of Vrindavan, playing hide and seek, building play bridges, jumping about like monkeys, and engaging in many other such games. End of the chapter. So, let's make a little bit again the connection with this. So, Sukadeva Goswami concluded his reply to Parikshit Maharaj's question. Not the more recent question about how the mothers love someone else's son as their child more than their children, but the other question, again, how can something that was done 1 year before be celebrated? So he concluded that reply. Inside that reply, there was the other question and the other reply. You have to bear in mind the meta-narrative of the Bhagavatam. So Sukadeva Goswami now, after replying to that question, which was, again, two chapters back, he continues to serve the Harikatha. No? That's how the commentators put it. They do not say, Sukadeva Goswami continues speaking. They say, he continues serving the Katha. And serving the Katha implies he was speaking about something, he was in a certain particular line of thought, and he was interrupted in a proper way, not criticizing that, by a question. He went in that direction, he replied that, it took two chapters, and he's serving the Katha now, like implying he's continuing with the flow he was describing before. So that's the idea. So he refers back to this, he said this same exact shloka at the end of chapter 11. Now we are at the end of chapter 14. So here's going back three chapters back, where he mentioned this same thing, like implying, okay, we'll reconnect from that point that I was speaking a few moments ago. That was before the beginning of the Agasur Lila. So he said this, same verse, Agasur Lila came. In connection to Agasur Lila, of course, Parikshit questions, Brahma Vimohan Lila, Brahma Stuti, other question of Parikshit, answered by Sukadeva. And now Sukadeva Goswami has wrapped up all that and returns to that point three chapters back, before the Agasura Lila began. So that, in this way, he's making a thematic, connection, and resuming his narrative from what he was saying some moment ago. So that's the explanation why this verse is exactly the same verse of three chapters back. Some other people say, oh, you see the same verse after three chapters. That means this chapter was not originally in the book. That's an interpolation. Of course, they have some other arguments about that, and we have to address them, again, in our second introduction class. But they go to this one, like saying, and actually, these are not only the two verses of the Bhagavatam, which are exactly the same. There are a few others, and most of them have the same dynamic. Some topic, some question in between, some not sidetracked, but going in another direction for a moment, returning, same topic. Like if I was telling you, I don't know. So let's speak about Krishna doing this. And you so much say, but Maharaj, can you reply to this question? And I speak for an hour and return. Let's speak about what Krishna did. I'm repeating the same thing I said 1 hour ago, let's continue in this direction. So this is what Sukadeva Goswami is doing here, no? Because again, he has described Krishna's Kumar Lila, and now comes the upcoming narration of the Poganda Lila. Remember, Krishna entered Poganda in this year, no? So now he's in Poganda age. Not only Krishna, but Krishna Balaram, they will be the two of them, Dauji Gopal, they will be described in the next chapter as such. Both of them enter Poganda age. So before going to 15th chapter, first verse, Sukadeva Goswami is concluding his point here, pointing, to that point he made before, so we now continue in this direction. Because if you go to the first verse of 15th chapter, immediately say, Krishna Balaram attained Poganda. They do not describe more, because that happened in between that particular year. And then they will describe, now they do not take care of calves, but cows, because they are bigger. And now comes the killing of the Nukasur, another Sakya Lila is coming in that 15th chapter. So again, Sukadeva Goswami is resuming the narrative, so to connect with the next chapter. So that to clarify why the repeated verse. No? And in this verse, which is, again, the same verse as three chapters back, some games are described, no? The boys were playing like hide and seek, for example, which inside that hide and seek dynamics, the implication is also they play, how do you say in English, cops and robbers? That was part of the hide and seek. Now in the context of hide and seek, cops and robbers was there. That's further clarified in chapters 37 of the 10th canto. Also in Sanskrit here, the word setu bandha is here, which can mean building a dam, but also can mean building a bridge, no? To cross across a pond or something, no? Like performing the lila of Ramachandra, building the bridge so they can, the story. No? So many of the boys invoke the different lilas of other avatars, if you will, in the context of Krishna lila, no? And they want to see the pastimes of Ramachandra. Okay, let's build a bridge now, and some of them will play the role of monkeys, as the verse is saying. So Ram Lila is present in Krishna Lila there. And in this verse in the Sanskrit, the plural is used for each one of the games mentioned. All of them are mentioned in plural, like implying that there were many of these games. Hide and seek is not only one type of hide and seek, one type of bridge building, one type of monkey playing. Ram Lila is unlimited as well. So there's even if they play the same game, the plural means the repetition of those games. No, they play them over and over again. They are not never getting tired, which means they are never the same. So, and we know how much capacity the boys have to create new games on the spot and so on. And then also, there's the word adi here in this verse, in the Sanskrit, which generally means etc. So the commentators say that throwing balls and kicking balls are implied by the word adi. So ball games enter into the scene, and of course we know Balaram is very expert in that. We have been speaking about these days as well. So, therefore, this is the end of chapter 14. We have reached the end of the whole chapter after a long journey of a few months. So in this way, Brahma Stuti is concluded. But let's conclude today's class and a whole series, as I also mentioned, by further explaining a few words about Brahma's future. Let's go to some oracle on Brahma. What will happen with Brahma, especially Pingoli laugh after this Brahma Stuti. We already mentioned something, and we will mention a few things more. So, if Brahma's prayers were heard, as we know they were, we have received different confirmation, how, in which way he attained full success? How that did play out? So we already mentioned some few things in this connection, and with your permission, I may repeat myself for a moment to give context. But as Brahma, as our Gumash points, all the Brahma engaged in picnic apparat, lila apparat, rupa apparat, and party card apparat, trying to kidnap us. So he didn't engage in nama apparat. So the name stayed with him. That was proved the last verse of the stuti was nam sankirtan. And as we know, then the name stayed with him quite a lot, to the point of him becoming born as Haridas Thakur in Gaurlila and being the Namacharya. That shows how much the name stayed with him. Although he was born in an outcased birth, due to considering Krishna's so-called apparently outcased situation as something inferior, okay, take that form for a while, that will help. So he appeared at Namacharya Haridas Thakur, which shows how seriously he took shelter of name, and how Krishna himself acknowledged Brahma's seriousness in embracing the name as Mahaprabhu, because Mahaprabhu was the one who baptized, if you will, Haridas Thakur as Namacharya, like confirming, you did very nicely, you really embraced the name very nicely from that few thousand years ago. So, but what happened in between those things? Let's go into details of that. After the Brahma Stuti finished, and to the point that Brahma attained the ultimate goal as Haridas Thakur. So, for that, I'll go a little bit in detail today for concluding to Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Navadvip Dhan Mahatmya, the fifth chapter, starting from verse 128, for those who then may like to go in detail. He will describe a little bit of that, no? In the context of Jiva Goswami doing parikram with Nityananda Prabhu in Antardvip, which is the central island in Navadvip. So the question is why? The question starts to, some questions start to come in connection to Antardvip. So the Bhaktivinoda Thakur will narrate how this in this Antardvip, Brahma obtained the mercy of Krishna in the form of Mahaprabhu. He begged for that mercy and he obtained that. Somehow he knew Krishna inspired himself in the heart, like, I'll be appearing as Gaur, go to Navadvip, and something interesting will be happening there. So, Brahma goes to Navadvip, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, right after the Brahma Stuti. He didn't go straight to Satya Lok, Rama Lok, but he had some stop in the flight. So, from Uttar Pradesh, was some stop in Bengal airport. So, he was there in Navadvip. And Brahma knowing, oh, eventually here, my Prabhu, my Master will appear as Gaur, the most merciful manifestation. He started to lament Brahma. Oh, if I had only been born as a cowherd boy in Braj, there I would have easily attained my goal, my service of Krishna. But implication, but I'm Brahma, and now I have to return to my planet for who knows how long. He started to cry and lament. So he thought, according, I will read some sections by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So Brahma thought, if I had taken birth as a cowherd boy, I would have easily obtained service to Sri Krishna. I did not have the great fortune to relish the rasa of those pastimes. But now, I will not have any weak mentality towards Sri Gaur, as I had with Krishna, thinking this is an impostor. I won't repeat the same mistake twice. So saying that, Brahma began to meditate and pray and perform tapasya in Sri Antardvip intensely and cry and beg. So Mahaprabhu appeared eventually as a result of Brahma. As Brahma was meditating in the beginning of creation in the lotus, now he was in another lotus, now this is described as a lotus also. And Antardvip is the center of the lotus. All the other islands are like the petals, but this is the center. He was in another lotus, meditating in the same Krishna but as Gaur. And Mahaprabhu appeared and gave darshan to Brahma. Cool. And say, I'm pleased with your sincerity and your devotional tapasya, and I offer you whatever benediction you want. So the reply of Brahma was fainting by having the darshan of Gaur Sundar. It was too Sundar. Too Gaur and too Sundar. He fainted. He didn't say anything, basically. But Mahaprabhu was there, and he'd say that Mahaprabhu put his feet on the head of Rama. A few of them. One feet in one head, one feet in another. And Rama walked and received transcendental divine knowledge and inspiration by the touch of Mahaprabhu's feet. And he began to offer prayers to Mahaprabhu. So now comes another Brahma stuti in itself. The prayers of Brahma to Mahaprabhu. Mm-hmm. So I'll recite some of, I will repeat some of them. Directly in English.
So Brahma still has four heads.
Sorry?
Brahma still has four heads.
Still, yeah, still, head. Still four heads, yeah. But they are getting smaller gradually. Human-like, eventually disappear. So Brahma said, crying and with full humility, continuing in the line of, in the spirit of his Brahma stuti, but upgraded now. Because as Mahaprabhu is Krishna in an upgraded version, we could say that Brahma's prayers now are an upgraded version of his Brahma stuti. So he said, I am very low and wretched. Being controlled by pride, I committed offenses at your feet, and as a result, I am absorbed in mundane enjoyment. The first half of my life has passed, and now I'm almost anxious about how the second life half will pass. Remember, he's in his 51st year. My mind is disturbed by many difficulties because of being indifferent toward you. My only prayer at your feet is that I may join you as your associate in your manifest pastimes. Prakat Lila. May I attain such a birth that my conceit in being the creator will be removed, that I may remain with you the whole time, and that I may glorify you. So that's the desire. Remember, Mahaprabhu says, ask me whatever benediction you want. So Brahma is asking, allow me to be born on earth in your Prakat Lila, Bhoma Lila, and in this connection, in such a way that my pride of being the creator is removed, that I will be with you a lot, and I may continuously glorify you. Create the arrangement for such a birth, please. So Mahaprabhu was hearing Brahma's prayer, and he said, Tathastu. So be it. And he bestowed the desired boon upon Brahma, predicting, you will be born as Haridas Thakur, basically. And he said the following. He said, you will always, Mahaprabhu said to Brahma, confirming his benediction, you will always think of yourself as low and fallen, outcast in those times. Your name will be Haridas, and you will be free from all pride. You will be born without pratistha. Daily, 300,000 names of Hari will dance upon your tongue. And at the time of leaving this world, you will have darshan of me. By virtue of this practice, at the end of the second half of your present birth, you will attain the Sri Navadvip Dham and be absorbed in eternal rasa. From today itself, you will attain the position of being my disciple. And later as Haridas, you will always serve me. So you can see that Krishna was replying to Brahma's prayers. He was not indifferent. So everything that Brahma asked was totally given. I want to be in a birth that I'm not proud by being a creator. Okay, you are an outcast. No? He asked for that, you have that. I want to be born in a way that I will always be glorifying you. 3 lakhs per day you will be chanting. No problem. Your tongue will be absolutely engaged. I will always want to be with you. As we'll know, Haridas Thakur will be daily visited by Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu himself is going to visit him because he, as an outcast, feels I cannot go to Jagannath Mandir and nearby that area. So Jagannath, he couldn't go see Jagannath, so the dancing Jagannath, Mahaprabhu, will go and visit him daily and to take Mahajagannath Prasad and feed Haridas Thakur every single day. And not only this, but here Mahaprabhu said, even at the end of your life, you will have direct darshan of me. But he said, now, at the end of your second half of your present birth, you will attain Navadvip. So that seems to convey, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, what actually happened. He ended his life and he was born. So saying this, Sriman Mahaprabhu disappeared. He gave the darshan, he confirmed the blessing, disappeared, and Brahma fainted again. After losing the darshan. Because again, you see Mahaprabhu, that's so intense, you will pass out. you stop seeing Mahaprabhu, that's so intense, you will pass out even more intensely. So that's the case of Brahma here. He passed, fell to the ground unconsciously. So eventually he reawoke, and he started to lament because of losing sight of the darshan of Sri Gaurasundara. So he wept for many days, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Of course, he was also happy by the blessing, but also mixed feeling because of losing sight of such a form. And knowing I have to go to Ramalokna, some time waiting. And it said that then he again returned to Brahmaloka to perform his duties as Brahma, as Bhagavan asked him. So again, just a few clarification regarding the dynamics according to from Bhaktivinoda Thakur's narrative. Here it seems that Brahma, again, after the stuti went to Navadvip. Right after the Brahma stuti, Mahaprabhu appeared, blessed him with the Gaur Lila Swarup as Haridas Thakur. But then Brahma returned to his post in Brahmalok, practiced Raga Bhakti there. And we could see that after completing his tenure, you say, at the end of his life as Brahma, he took birth in a Gaur Lila as Haridas Thakur, wherever the Gaur Lila was being performed, and attained Golok from there. Or again, if you want, some other versions are sometimes entertaining the Gaudiya community that after being blessed by Mahaprabhu, he returned to his post for a few minutes, basically, or a few days, and when Gaur Lila manifested on that earth, a few thousand earthly years after, he came in that following Kali Yuga's Haridas Thakur and perfected his swarup. But after perfecting his swarup in that Kali Yuga, he returned to his post as Brahma, completed the tenure before entering Golok, or other of the opinions that we already mentioned, whatever may be the case. Again, do not get lost in details. The important thing is, as we can see, Brahma stuti invoked the necessary grace, the necessary darshan, necessary benedictions for him to attain his desired goal, but by first becoming Haridas Thakur. That's for sure. That's a point we want to make here now. Before entering this realm of Sakya Prem eternally, he appeared in Gaur Lila as Haridas Thakur. And after passing away as Haridas Thakur, we will think, okay, he entered that realm. And just to conclude, it's interesting because not now, not today, not tomorrow, but in 10 days, we will be celebrating the passing of Haridas Thakur. So again, no coincidence there, and it was not planned as such. No? So this is in total connection to this series, basically. No? and if you want to make it that even more mystical, I mean, I'm not such a mystical person who wants to be, but I'm studying Chaitanya Charitamrita for the last months, and today the section to study is the passing of Haridas Thakur in the Antilila. It's okay. I was not calculating. I will read as long and as fast and as slow. So the last day I will tell all the guys here, I'm just studying the passing of Haridas Thakur. It happened to be like that. And again, Mahaprabhu, in that passing, a few words regarding the passing of Haridas Thakur, because to conclude, because that speaks about how all these blessings of Mahaprabhu became truth and Brahma attained his goal. And we know, I won't enter into the details of the whole festival, but Mahaprabhu told Haridas and Brahma, even when you pass as Haridas Thakur, when you leave this body, you will have darshan of me. So we know the story. Haridas was chanting, but was getting old and old and chanting slower. And Mahaprabhu, on his daily visit, will ask him, are you feeling bad? Are you sick? He said, yes. Can you determine which is the sickness? Yes. What's the sickness? I'm not able to finish my prescribed number of rounds. That's my sickness. He will chant 192 rounds per day. And Mahaprabhu said, don't chant that much. You're already perfected. Okay, so he makes that point. You attain your ultimate perfection. You don't need to follow such a strict sadhana. Of course, Haridas Thakur, in extreme humility, said, please do not cheat me. Do not tell that to me. And starts to cry at the feet of Mahaprabhu. So eventually, a few days after, Haridas Thakur is about to leave his body. And he asks one last blessing to Mahaprabhu. He said, what? Yeah, please stand in front of me. And I just want to, like bumblebee, drink the beauty of your darshan. I want to have that last impression. Remember, this is Brahma having gone through all this journey and now finding himself in that situation and remembering, what Mahaprabhu promised to him as Brahma. So now you will have the darshan of me at the very last moment. That's the last thing you will see in your life. me in front of you. So that happened. No? So Haridas Thakur sat in front of Mahaprabhu and started chanting, having the drink in the darshan of Gaurasundara, and he passed away. And then comes a whole chapter in which Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami just describes the passing of Haridas Thakur, which you won't find basically any chapter in the whole Chaitanya Charitamrita describing the passing of anyone. Whole chapter for that. So that's, again, that makes a further point. To say that when that happened, Mahaprabhu started, before that happened, before Haridas Thakur passed away, but he was there, Mahaprabhu was there, all the associates were there, Mahaprabhu, to say, started to glorify Haridas Thakur, like if he would have five mouths. Not only with Bob mouth, he was praying, give me more mouths, I need to glorify him so much. And then when Haridas Thakur passed away, Brahma, don't lose sight, Mahaprabhu took the body himself. Again, the body of an outcast. Mahaprabhu is a Brahman, a sannyasi. According to Varnashram, that shouldn't be happening. But by doing that, he's showing he's not an outcast. This body is totally transcendental. He's there. He's gone there. So he's taking the body of Haridas Thakur with his own hands, and he starts to dance with the body of Haridas Thakur Mahaprabhu. He starts to invoke kirtan. Try to imagine this scene, no? And to dance with the body of Brahma Haridas. And then he goes to the ocean at Jagannath Puri, and Mahaprabhu himself bathes the body as it's part of the ritual for this samadhi ceremony. Mahaprabhu himself is bathing the body of Haridas Thakur, and then he himself starts to make the hole on earth. He himself puts the body of Haridas Thakur in samadhi. And samadhi indicates eternal attainment. Samadhi. Di means dimahi, meditation. Sam means perfect. Perfect meditation. So the body is preserved. To make the point, in this body, his eternal existence. Today, he makes the whole samadhi ceremony, he covers the pole, and then Mahaprabhu starts to circumambulate, no? The samadhi of Haridas Thakur. As Brahma circumambulated Krishna before leaving, now Mahaprabhu is returning the favor, if you will, and Krishna's Mahaprabhu circumambulating. And if that's not enough, after that, Mahaprabhu, as a sannyasi, starts to beg from different people in Jagannath Puri, beg Boga or Prasad from Jagannath Puri, whatever the case, to organize a whole Tirubhav Mahotsav for the passing of Haridas Thakur. So he does the whole thing from beginning to end, Mahaprabhu himself with his own hands, begging, and then when everyone is invited to the celebration of the divine passing of Haridas Thakur, Mahaprabhu himself is serving Prasad to everyone. No? Like he's totally in ecstasy, glory, and at every moment glorifying Haridas Thakur, five mouths. And at the very end of the whole festival, like a day like today, if you will, conclude the whole thing, to say that Mahaprabhu gave a very solemn, great blessing to everyone who was there. So I'll read that blessing so you can be part of that as well. So Mahaprabhu said, anyone who has seen the festival of Sri Haridas Thakur's passing away, anyone who has chanted and danced here, anyone who has offered sand on the body of Haridas Thakur, and anyone who has joined this festival to partake of the prasadam, will achieve the favor of Krishna very soon. Haridas Thakur was the crown jewel on the head of this world. Without him, the world is now bereft of its valuable jewel. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then told everyone, say, all glories to Haridas Thakur. All glories to Haridas Thakur.
All glories to Haridas
Thakur. Haridas Thakur ki jai. Haridas Thakur ki jai. So in this way, no? That's a conclusion. For us to see what happened with Brahma. No? That was the original question. Were Brahma's prayers heard? Oh yes, they were. No? Although Krishna remained silent during the whole stuti, didn't mean he was not hearing, as you can see. No? So try to remember all this. No? When you feel he's not here, he's not replying. He's not replying, but he's hearing. No? Don't think he's not hearing because he's not replying. So Krishna was silent during the whole Brahma stuti. But now we are seeing how much he considered Brahma's prayers. I mean, how much he made all the arrangements for Brahma's desire to become real. And at the point of his appearance at Haridas Thakur, how Mahaprabhu treated him. And when Haridas Thakur passed, how Mahaprabhu performed the whole ceremony from beginning to end. So in this way, in the form of the life of Brahma's Haridas Thakur, we have a whole interesting whole separate appendix. Our series of Brahma Stuti. You know? We could start another whole series now, the appendix, the afterthought of the Brahma Stuti, because we can always do that. The journey never ends. Nityam Bhagavato Sivaya. Eternally we are to to start to honor the Bhagavatam. So see you in our next series. No? There's no end to the journey. So thank you so much to all of you, the present ones here in Costa Rica, those present throughout the series in the different places we have presented them, those who have been following the series online or somehow giving your support and affection for that, different devotees from different parts of the place where I've been doing the series. I'm sending greetings and putting the flags of their respective countries. So thank you so much, my gratitude for having accompanied us in this interesting journey, which is in itself a journey representing our own journey. So I hope this attempt of service to Sri Guru, Vaishnavas and the Bhagavat will bear some fruit in our hearts. And again, see you in our next series. Haridas Thakur ki jai, Sri Brahmaji ki jai, Sri Brahmastuti ki jai, Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Gurudev ki jai, Srimad Mahaprabhu ki jai, Sri Harinam Sankirtan ki jai, Sri Dauji Gopal ki jai, Harinam Sankirtan ki jai, Gaur Bhakta Vrind ki jai, Gaur Premanand, Hari Hari Bol.
Swami Padmanabha Maharaj ki jai.